Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Good to have you all with us today. We are about to have a conversation in this first part of our program, a really interesting piece that was written in Salon, I don't want to say Slate, I keep doing that to him, by Andrew O'Hare, who is a staff writer for Salon.com. And Andrew, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So, I won't put you in Slate anymore, I promise.
It happens a lot, believe me.
So, but your article is really interesting. Let me work from your article from the bottom up. And folks, you can join us here as you hear this at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to one of our Facebook pages or at Mark Steiner if you want to tweet. But anyway, I think that the whole proposition that we have made this kind of Faustian bargain after 9/11, and you were a New Yorker. You were in New York when that happened.
Yes, sir.
And so, and this kind of equally terrifying event that happened in Boston. But tell us, from your perspective, what you think we were, how we were set up, what we were set up with.
I mean, I almost don't want to say that it was a setup because
bad choice of words, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. What happened was that essentially the government that was then in power, and I would to some degree extend that to the current administration too. Promised us that they would keep us safe if we would give up certain things that we were supposed to have had all along. And I'm basically talking about a lot of the Bill of Rights, a lot of the enumerated amendments to the Constitution, you know, unlimited freedom of speech, unlimited freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, the right of habeas corpus, a lot of other things that have been worked out over, you know, 200 plus years of American history. And that we were told that we had to make those things be kind of conditional or provisional. The government had to decide whether those rights applied to everybody and under what circumstances they could be revoked. And that if we sort of went along with that deal, that they would keep us safe. But from my point of view, the promise of safety is always an illusion, and especially if you want to have a democracy. There's no way that you can keep crazy people from hurting others. It's regrettable. I wish the world weren't like that, but I'm not in charge. I'm not God, and I'm grateful for that. And I really feel like, to some degree, all of us, even those of us who said we were against it, we went along with it to some extent. We kind of agreed to give up these things, which were supposedly precious parts of our birthright, and now we don't have some of those rights anymore. I'm not going to say the entire Constitution was ripped up, but some important rights have been taken away. And we don't have security either. As we saw in Boston, you know, nobody really, yeah, I guess the FBI had interviewed the older brother, but nobody knew that these guys were going to do something this crazy. It does not appear that they had significant foreign training. We won't know the whole story for a long time. But we're talking about an event that quite possibly couldn't really have been stopped. And there's going to be more like that. The sad truth is you cannot stop crazy people from hurting others in this world. And the bargain of giving up rights for security is always a false bargain. It never works out. I quote something Ben Franklin said
yes.
In the 1750s, that essentially those who would trade security, those who would trade liberty for security, rather, deserve neither liberty nor security. And
right.
Won't get either one.
I mean, your quote at the end of the article is, those who would give up essential liberty to obtain
right.
a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. You're not part of the chorus of both liberals and conservatives who are condemning the FBI because they didn't kind of follow the Tarnieff brothers, at least one of them, and stop them from doing this, that they could have done it. You're not part of that chorus.
Well, I would be the first to admit that I'm not a national security expert. I'm not an intelligence expert. I'm not a law enforcement expert. So I'm withholding judgment on that question for the time being. And I'm saying that part of it may be that there was a screw up here. That is possible, certainly. But the larger point is that you cannot expect, you know, unless you want to go all the way to the Soviet level of interference in individual liberty, and even then, you're not going to be able to stop all possible plots, all possible conspiracies, all possible insane people with bombs. There's always going to be a way through, you know, and that's what Americans don't seem willing to accept. And what I saw in the wake of the Boston tragedy, which was a really awful event, I'm not going to go anywhere near saying that it wasn't a terrible thing that happened. But what we saw in the wake of that was this tremendous national freakout, and I think that was a recognition of the fact that we were told by politicians that they would offer us security, and this was a reminder of the fact that they can't actually do that. So to me, the question, it may be a valid question in this case of what did the FBI know, what should the FBI have known, was there some evidence that these guys were actually dangerous? I don't know the answers to any of those things, and in fairness, I don't think anyone else does yet either. But the larger question of can the government keep us safe 100%, I think the answer to that is obvious.
And one of the things you also point out here, and we've talked about it on the air a bit as well before this, but I think it's an important point, is that we do have the illusion of safety in America. And you specifically raise the point in your piece about the bombing attack that killed 17 civilians in Afghanistan in Kunar province, 12 of them being children. And the dozens of children in Pakistan and Afghanistan who have been killed by drones, who did nothing more than live in the proximity of where we assume enemies are,
right?
And so we forget that. I think that it's that as if these lives didn't mean as much as our own.
Yeah, I think that is the troubling, a really troubling aspect of American policy right now. I do not actually believe that individual Americans think that, you know, a person who is killed by a terrorist bombing in Boston is less worthwhile as an individual than a person who gets killed by a bomb in Afghanistan. But it's surprising to us for a bomb to go off in Boston. It's not expected. The world pretty much expects Afghan villages to get pounded into rubble. That's the asymmetrical nation of the world right now, which is deeply immoral. I don't know that that's the American people's fault exactly, but we have bought into a set of myths that has made that asymmetry possible. And I think that we need to, at some level, own up to that. Now, that doesn't justify what happened in Boston. I don't view it as blowback. I would rather live in a world where we didn't see children get blown up, no matter, you know, where they happen to live.
Right.
But I do think that we feel protected in this way that is part of a bargain that is unfortunate and maybe on some level immoral. I don't want to act like I'm the judge of whether that's the case or not, but it disturbs me. I'll say that. I think that when we do have a national trauma over a bombing in which three people were killed, and again, I don't dispute that on the ground it was an incredibly traumatic event, and yet we don't even notice when 12 children in Afghanistan get killed a few days earlier, there is something wrong with this picture.
You know, there is something wrong with that picture in many ways. One of the things that we were talking about here at the very beginning of this, when the two bombs went off in Boston, the very beginning, we had a former CIA agent, an analyst on the show, who's been on the show numerous times, and he nailed it. And I think it's very interesting he nailed it, because he said this is why it's very tough to kind of think we can be protected from everything. He said, "I look at this case, and I'm just going to make a judgment. I could be wrong." He said, "But I think this is not an overseas conspiracy." He said, "I think these are just kind of rogue elements who probably are Muslim in America, who just were very angry and did this on their own." And
yep.
He nailed it. I think that's part of what as long as this kind of constant war between our country and civilians take place in Pakistan and Afghanistan and other places, we in some senses create a greater danger for ourselves.
I think that's an inescapable conclusion to draw. And all you get, unfortunately, this chorus of people on, you know, particularly in right-wing talk TV, and I don't know what kind of popular constituency there is for this, but we shouldn't give tourist visas to anyone from a Muslim country.
Right.
We shouldn't allow students from those countries to come to our country to study physics. You know, whatever kinds of things they come up with that... First of all, our country is what it is, an incredibly diverse society. That is the strength of our country, and it does come with certain potential weaknesses. And there's no way to turn the clock back on that. I feel like there's this irrational desire to sort of create the idea of security, which is always going to be a complete illusion, that if we change this aspect of policy or that aspect of policy, we can create some kind of lockdown situation where events like this don't happen. And yeah, your guest, it sounds as if your guest's analysis was absolutely spot on. And, you know, in these guys, in one of the brothers had been in the United States since he was 8 years old. He, for all practical purposes, he was an American citizen. He's an American citizen. He's still alive. And the what are we supposed to do about that? I think the problem, as you suggest, is a lot about the larger picture of our, you know, deeply dysfunctional relationship to the Islamic world and the Arab world, which is not to defend, you know, somebody that would do something like this, not at all. But if we want to understand the reasons why they happen, it has a long history.
So what do you think, given the stuff you wrote about this? I know you do a lot of writing about film and popular culture as well,
which I've
enjoyed since discovering you. I'll have to get you back on the air to talk about that.
Terrific.
But I'm it's just very curious where you want to take this from here. For your thinking, your writing, what you think we ought to be wrestling with after this? What do you want to know?
I think we need to think deeply about the power, the amount of power that we've invested in the executive branch and in the intelligence agencies. You know, for me, the drone wars, the killing of American citizens who were defined as enemy combatants via a secret process that no one can talk about, the fact that various constitutional freedoms seem to be conditional now, I really think we have to have a national conversation about that. And I think that in the long haul, more freedom is always going to be better. It's going to be better for our relationship to the world. It's going to be better in terms of not making other people angry at us. Now, that's not to say that when somebody, you know, does something bad, they shouldn't be prosecuted. I'm grateful to see that apparently we're not going to down the path of defining the surviving brother as an enemy combatant. I don't know what that would have meant.
Right, right.
An enemy combatant has to represent something, and I'm not aware of what this individual represents right now. I think there's a lot of room for us still to talk about the choices that we've made and the morality of those choices. But the expectation that we're going to be completely secure from terrorism, let's use that word, in a world where it happens all over the place in many different countries. You know, you go back to Europe in the 1970s and 1980s, there was a real wave of terrorist attacks all over the continent, and those democratic societies managed to deal with it and move on, and violence is now very, very low in those societies. You know, there are lessons to be learned here.
Well, Andrew O'Hara, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I want to, and we'll be linking to your site and to your articles on our website, and look forward to having you on for different discussions on the air here, covering a number of issues. It'll be a pleasure to do that.
Oh, thanks so much. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Andrew O'Hara, Salon.com, a really good piece, How Boston Exposes America's Post-9/11 Bargain. Be linked to our website. Take care.